Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Yeah, so good to have you with us, everybody. It is Monday, October 17th, 2022. Getting so much feedback about our podcast, and especially in these markets. So thank you so much. Give a shout out to some of those folks here in just a minute. I want to say this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for you, mortgage professionals, and we're grateful to have you as our listener. We are just here and committed to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Candor Technology, our newest sponsor. It's the only automated underwriting system to earn a patent for its unique technology solution. Candor also optimizes the loan delivery workflow so operations can right size for the last time. A lot of right sizing going on. Mr. Kittle's doing that. Really, really doing a good job for clients on that. So check out Candor. Check out Finastra as well. Experience the power of fully integrated approach to mortgage lending that simplifies the borrowing experience and streamlines the process for its employees. Also, Form Free. Check out Form Free. We love what these guys are doing. In fact, we just released a hot topic today, this morning. You've got to go to our website and check this out, folks. And we're Brent Chandler and I recorded this on Friday. And it's hot off the press. It is latest information. It's a press release that's coming out today. And my phone's already blowing up on it. It's nice to know we have listeners and to hear back from you, listeners. So check out the podcast we just released with Form Free. They're talking about RIKI, our Residential Income Knowledge Index, R-I-K-I, RIKI, Residential Income Knowledge Index. Check it out because it creates a residual income approach and increases the home ownership opportunities to 50 million Americans that under the current Fannie Freddie guidelines does not work. Now, the best news is Fannie and Freddie have also signed on with RIKI, have approved it. So check out what Brent is doing over there at Form Free is nothing less than amazing. So glad to have them in that advertiser. Also, Lender Toolkit. They do a great job providing the sharpest tools in the shed for all your Encompass needs. Also, Total Expert. I love these guys from the – I love CRM because I love community – I mean, customer ways of connecting with the customer. So they have a customer engagement platform that is just excellent for every kind of company that's in the mortgage lending space. They're a fintech company that's top of the game. Check out their purpose-built CRM. That also, I mean, oh, by the way, on that also, they, let's see, we did a past interview with them on October 14th and then 2021, October 21st, we'll be releasing past interviews October 14th with Jesse Lopez. Go check that out. That was really good. Jesse has so much energy. And then an upcoming interview is October 21st with Dan Catinelli. We just recorded that and we'll be releasing that on October 21st. Also, you'll want to join Joe Weldu at the conference as he speaks across many of the institutions. He'll be speaking at the conference. So get a chance to listen to what he has to say. Also, Simple Nexus does a great job with their solution. And we did a past interview on June 21st with Shane Westra. And we're also got an upcoming interview we're releasing November 2nd with Lori Brewer. Looking forward to having my old friend Lori Brewer on the podcast again. Well, I'll say a special thank you to the Mortgage Bankers Association, Lenders One, Mortgage Collaborative, Success Kit, Knowledge Coop, Mobility, MMI, Modex, Mortgage Advisory Tools, as well as DW Consulting. So appreciate you all very much. Also, I want to say our previous episodes, I mean, I got to stress this enough because the way we're doing our podcast now, we used to do the regular podcast, which happens every Monday is when we release it or we record it live and then release it on an edited basis on Tuesdays. We also release up to three podcasts a week. And that's another reason why our listenership is exploding. October 12th is How to Sell Your Authentic Personal Brand by Dr. Cindy McGovern. That has been well received. October 14th, we talked about tackling current market challenges with Jesse Lopez. I already mentioned about that. Excuse me. He's with Mortgage Solutions Financial. That was a really good interview. We really focused a lot on what Total Expert does. Upcoming this week, we've got, of course, we've already released the one today, but upcoming is October 19th. We have Kevin Perino coming on, and my buddy KP will be talking about how to do these conferences and do them well. He is just such a delight. How that guy can go all day and all night and just he attends the meetings, has the most important meetings. I recorded this interview because I wanted our listeners that are going to be attending the conference to have a little bit of an idea of how to go about planning these conferences and getting the max out of it. Kevin does. He maximizes these conferences. We already talked about Dan Catinelli being on October 21st, and then October 22nd, we've got an interview. This is an up-and-coming company. It's a brand-new company with a CRM. Garrett Locklear of Candid CRM. It's more than a CRM. It's almost like it shouldn't have the name CRM. It does CRM, but it does a whole lot more. So check it out. Special shout outs to our listeners. We have a whole bunch of people at Leader One Financial listening to us today, tuning in. It was brought up at their company meeting, and I had a chance to present to a number of their producers this last week. And so thank you and welcome, Lenders One, as well as Emily Farley was saying, Dave, something going on with the podcast. It's just like the quality of these podcasts are just getting better and better. So Emily Farley at Atlantic Bay. By the way, we interviewed her a while back. Go search our website for Emily Farley and listen to her. What a great leader she is. What an amazing leader. Appreciate her and Atlantic Bay and all her friends there. Of course, all our listeners across from all y'all, as we say here in Texas, we appreciate all y'all. So anyway, we've got a special thank you goes out to Adam DeSantis, Les Parker, Matt Graham, David Kittle, Alice Alvey, Alan Pollock, and of course, my co-host, Mark Helm. Mark, how you doing, friend?
Doing great, yes. David. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's fun listening to you and Kittle talk about the football games over the weekend. I said, I sometimes wish we could chit-chat about that, but we're all about mortgages and not about football, although could be very good fun recording content. So, Mark, good to have you here along with all the regulars. We got a full lineup. So let's get over to this week's MBA Mortgage Minute with Adam DeSantis. What you got for us, Adam?
Hi, I'm Adam DeSantis. This is the Mortgage Minute, the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Here's what you need to know. Last week, MBA and several industry trade groups, as part of the Black Homeownership Collaborative, submitted a letter to HUD Secretary Marsha Fudge urging her to reduce FHA's annual mortgage insurance premium and modify the life of loan premium requirement. This effort follows an earlier letter submitted by an MBA-led coalition of real estate trade groups to the White House National Economic Council last month. MBA has strongly advocated for the reduction of FHA mortgage insurance premiums since the November 2021 release of FHA's annual report to Congress, which showed continued strengthening of the FHA Mutual Mortgage Insurance Fund. A reduction in FHA's annual premium will drive the greatest payment relief for FHA borrowers. MBA will continue to work with industry and housing group allies to call for a reduction to the MIP to provide meaningful relief to FHA-insured borrowers. And don't forget, MBA's annual convention in Nashville, Tennessee kicks off this weekend. It's not too late to register. Go to mba.org/annual for more information. We hope to see you there. Now that's it for this week. Thank you for listening.
Good job, Adam. Thank you. Looking forward to meeting him. I actually have met him a couple of times, but now that he's on a regular on here, I just want to get into a deeper conversation. Adam, thank you so much. Thank you also to the MBA for all that they do for our industry. And looking forward to seeing all of you all, again, as we say here in Texas, all y'all, at the conference. Thank you. Let's get over TM Spotlight, Les Parker's TM Spotlight segment. He does a macro view of the markets, and it's always got a wonderful music parody. So let's see what Les has for us this week. Les, here you go.
The thunder of lightning blows. Tear trees apart. You've been thunderous.
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Policymakers are nervous about the lack of liquidity in treasuries, which Janet Yellen affirmed last week. Sadly, every MBS issuer and TBA seller sees the effect of illiquidity. Welcome to the cautionary tale of the rise and fall of quantitative easing. Amid active QE and low volatility, hedgers can make a case that they can outperform the inefficiency of the locked borrower. But with unwinding of QE and the resulting high volatility, they can't outperform without taking significant market risk.
Don't be led astray.
These views are my own. Find your way at tmspotlight.com.
Mark, that sounded like Les Parker trying to throw up a hairball. That was amazing. I couldn't get that.
I want to know what's in his coffee this morning.
he had a couple double espressos when he recorded that. Oh my gosh, that is amazing. That was funny. So
yeah, it was.
Les Parker, you know, I remember when he first started doing these. Alice, you remember when Les Parker first started doing these? You know, he was so, hello, this is Les Parker. He sounded like a revved up version of Matt Graham here. I love you, Matt. And now he's gone, oh my gosh, with the music and the parodies and all that. But that's a good stuff. That was really good stuff. So, Matt, I'd love to get your perspective on that because we're going to come to you next in just a minute. But do you want to comment on the macro view of the markets for Parker? Other than the hairball?
Yeah. So the Yellen thing came up several times in MBS Live last week. I got a lot of questions about it. I think that the liquidity issue is something that's been on the radar for a while. And the thing that Yellen said most recently was just sort of an amplification of what she said 4 days prior. Yeah. And you know, the Fed knew, and Yellen's probably more sensitive to it due to her tenure at the Fed, just knowing that a big buyer is indeed out of the market. And, yeah, that can create some liquidity issues. But exactly. It's not something they haven't dealt with before, and it's one of those things where if they do deal with it, it is more of a technical housekeeping kind of measure and not really indicative of signs of cracks in the system. It's not like the kind of thing where, you know, you would go to Zero Hedge and say, yeah, everything is going to crash. But it is, you know, I think a sign that the Fed is moving as aggressively as they can to decrease accommodation at a time where they're also doing everything they can to fight inflation. And I think if you didn't have those two things existing simultaneously, it might not be as noticeable, but the good thing about the inflation part is it is creating some bond buying demand due to yields being as high as they are and the belief that they'll eventually come down and the Fed will eventually do its job. So I think I'm putting a pin in the Yellen stuff and we'll see what we see if it's anything more than just a technical measure that is a temporary thing like they had to do with the repo operations, you know, last time.
Yeah,
in October, by the way.
In October, too. I know. And October, we were just talking about that before we went live here, kind of in the virtual green room. Kittle, your thoughts on Mr. Parker's commentary? I admire Les because you know Les as well as I do, David. And he is – for him to come out of the box like that and just get like – do what he's doing is just – it's so refreshing. I love it.
It really was. It woke me up.
Yeah.
Unless somebody woke you up, there, Kittle. That's good.
Yeah,
that's
so unless less this morning, you know.
Unless less, yeah.
It really was. You know,
So anyway, thoughts on the market, Yellen? Any comments on Yellen over the weekend or
no,
over last week?
I tend to agree. I don't have anything to add to it, really. I think, I think I just want to hold the comment on that and see before I step out on the limb.
Well, I think about it from, there are political aspects about this. I mean, what is some of the – and that's one of the things, David, I love your passion for politics as well. And we try to stay out of politics here, and I don't want to go down that path of politics. But we do – but there are aspects of that with Yellen and all that. So I'm just wondering about it. We'll let you get out. We'll not press
well,
it on
you know,
that.
I'll only say this. I just think she's been wrong so many times.
Yeah.
I hear
you in the background chuckling too. I agree. She has been, and that's just fact. I mean, that's fact. So, I mean, we'll be interesting to see what happens with it. Mark, you want to wrap it up before we get back to Mr. Graham?
Are you ready for me to do my part or wrap this
up? No, I was just – no. You know the amount of trouble I took last week for almost overlooking you last week? I did overlook you. Can't believe it. I won't do that again.
I can wrap it up. Okay, I can wrap it up.
Do a wrap up on Bart Parker's part.
Yeah, I had a call this past week, first one I've had from one of our listeners that point blank asked me a question. And they said, you know, in the podcast, David talks about your background, and I'm just wondering with someone like with your background, what you think about what's happening in our industry and what it's doing to our people out there, not only for today, but for tomorrow and for their futures in mortgage banking. And so if it's okay with you, David, I'm going to give you a little talk just a second here to talk about a few of those things. I'm a big believer that understanding where your people are going, where they're coming from, where they want to be is one of the most important things you can do as a manager. And that's pretty true across the board in any kind of job that we have. This is very, very true in times of economic distress and turndowns in markets and things when people are going away and not knowing what their future is going to be. I talked to one client here last week that was actually trying to soften that blow by offering some of their people part-time jobs and offering their people less of a severance with the possibility of coming back in the future when they would open up and have more volume, because they know that's going to happen. It's just a cyclical thing, and it's going to come back. So I remember when I started in this business in a management training program for a savings loan, was doing lending and savings and counseling and all kind of stuff. And the psychology of the situation was real interesting, because the guy that headed up HR had a degree in philosophy. And he called me in one day when I started, and he had a couple comments, but one he asked me, he says, so you got this degree in psychology? Yeah. And I said, yeah. And he says, well, you know, it won't do you any good in this business. That doesn't matter to us. You don't have an MBA. You don't have a degree in finance. It's not going to help you at all in your career. And I have laughed about that conversation about 100 times in my career, because when I had 1,800 employees, nearly 2,000 at one time, I said, thank God I know how people work and what makes them work and how to understand them, because I couldn't be as effective manager as I'm being. So a long time ago in my background, I developed an acronym. It's called – it's real easy for me and David Kittle to remember, because it's ALE. It's A-L-E. It's act, and it's listen, and it's evaluate. You ask, you listen, and you evaluate. So when you have people come into you with problems, you ask them how they really feel about it. You listen to what they have to say, and you evaluate it and make decisions upon that evaluation rather than making spot decisions out there. And in my management career, well, I was real big on management meetings when I had all my officers come to a meeting, is every week at officers' meeting, focus on a couple of officers, different ones every week, and ask them what's the biggest problem they have in their job today, what needs to be fixed in their job to make it better, and how can we better service our customers. And with those things in mind, people would give us some answers that just blew me away. I challenge all the managers out there to realize that the best answers for solutions in your company might be with the person you just let go. It also might be the person that's the lowest person on the rung and management in your ladder, and it might be with your counterpart who you don't think knows anything about your side of the business. Do you need to always ask, listen, and evaluate on how we go? And it's very important to do that, because you can't fix situations or understand situations unless you listen to them appropriately, understand all the aspects, and can make an educated decision how you can move forward. So when we're making decisions today about cutting people loose, we need to apply those things to it. We need to apply, what did this person contribute to our company? What could they continue to contribute to the company? And find if there's an opportunity for that person to do something else in your company until the market comes back, where their position will be valuable. And evaluate the situation we have rather than just making harsh decisions. And I know Mr. Kettle and Mr. Nathan do a lot of work on this, and they understand what I'm talking about, but it's really tough. The toughest thing in business is downsizing. And it's a lot tougher than growing a shop, because when you start growing a shop, there's always people out there looking for a job. But downsizing, you're putting people out of work who might or might not come back in the industry based on the taste they have for what happened to them in the industry. And you don't know whether it's going to happen 3 months from now, 6 months from now, or 6 years from now. So it makes it really tough for us to manage what we're doing. So I asked all of you out there, is listen to your employees, ask them the right questions, listen to them good, and evaluate what they say, and you might find the answers to many of your problems is in the solutions that your employees give to you when they talk to you. Thank you, David.
Good, good, good. Man, just want to sit and listen to the wisdom of that. Some great words.
Boy, Lincoln, I got to tell you, I'm glad you're recording this because that was golden.
That was golden. That was really, really golden. People say, what does this have to do with the markets, man? Because what Matt's about ready to get into is, I mean, there's a lot of, I look at Matt Graham's website, by the way. Got to sign up for, I'm just buying a little spiel of Matt. Matt Graham, one founder and CEO of MBS Live. With the market update, it's going to get there in just a minute. But I look, Matt, on your screen, and I read all the commentary that's up there. There's a lot of worried people. There's a lot of concerned people. And Mark's wisdom that he just shared there is really good. And by the way, for those of you who say, well, what is he talking about? He heard me talk about this. Mark is only 2 hours away from having a PhD in family counseling, psychology, Mark? I want to make sure I got that right.
Psychology,
yeah.
Yes.
Just 2 hours away from, so you wonder why he has been successful as an executive as he has. There you are, right there. It's more than education, but it also comes to the heart. So, Matt Graham, yes, Kittle, we would love to continue on with that. We will after we get towards the end of the podcast. We get back into it a little bit more. But Matt Graham's here, and I know there's a whole lot of people interested in what you have to say about the markets, and we have you're jazzing full time. Is it almost turned into a counseling position, Matt?
Yeah, definitely. I wish I was as awake as Les to really do it the credit it deserves.
That's funny. It's so true. Yeah. Parker's chuckling.
Yeah.
Listen to this right now. It's all right. So what you got for us today?
Everybody's feeling drained. As drained as pipelines. Mm-hmm. Things have been just absolutely crazy. Volatility is ridiculous, and the motivations for movement haven't always been super straightforward. We've talked for a few weeks about the spillover from stuff that's going on in the UK, which seems a bit overstated, but honestly, it's really not. It's having a big effect, and it's continuing to have an effect, even at the start of this week, where you have the new finance minister over there retracting more of the quote-unquote mini-budget stuff that started all of the drama back during Fed Week. And British bond markets cheered that. They rallied 40 bips in a couple hours tops, 20 bips instantly. And that spilled over to treasuries and got us started off on a good note today. But we were coming down from yields, 10-year yields that were over 4% yet again. As for last week's drama, in addition to the UK headlines, there was a lot of focus on CPI, Consumer Price Index, the most relevant inflation metric as far as the market reaction is concerned. It's always worth pointing out that the Fed says that they prefer PCE as their inflation metric, but PCE comes out 2 weeks after CPI, so CPI tends to be the one that moves markets. And no exception last week, it came out just a hair higher than expected at the core level, and that caused yields to spike immediately from under 3.9 to over 4% in the blink of an eye, relatively. And that was all it took, 0.6 versus 0.5 forecast. And so that's the second straight month that it's been at 0.6, the core level. And as a reminder, the core strips out food and energy prices. So it's the more even-keeled metric, and that's the one that the Fed really wants to try to rein in. And then to make matters worse, on Friday, the Consumer Sentiment Report has a metric for consumer inflation expectations, and that's something the Fed continues to mention as something they're watching. That showed its first major uptick in several months and added to losses on Friday. Traders made for the exits heading into the weekend and then, of course, came back in a little bit this morning, but we're still hanging out around this 4% range in 10-year yields. So we are very much waiting to see data that reinforces the notion that rates have risen enough to control inflation, and inflation needs to start coming down, but it needs to be reflected in the data. And once that happens, I think markets are going to be really receptive to that, and there's a risk that they'll be too receptive because it'll be seen as some sort of turning point, and I think you might have some buyers that are a little bit eager. We had some buyers that definitely stepped in last week when yields were over 4%, and that's good. I mean, it sort of suggests that the market views the Fed as credible. They think, hey, they are being aggressive enough that this has to have an impact on growth and inflation, to such an extent that rates come down in the future. And unfortunately for us here in the mortgage industry and other rate sensitive industries, it is a discovery process that takes time that's measured in months. We can have some traction occur over weekly time horizons, but really we're talking about the day one of this process occurring when we get a CPI report that is lower than expected and showing a decline in inflation. And then we're going to need another month of that and probably another month after that before markets really believe that we've turned a corner. And more importantly, the Fed is going to have to acknowledge that in such a way that they say, hey, we're going to be receptive to this even after only a few months, even though we spent most of 2022 telling you that we were going to jack rates up as high as we could and keep them there for as long as we can. It looks like, you know, our policy is having the effect we want, and things are looking good. People, keep your fingers crossed. I don't think the Fed is necessarily eager to say anything like that right now. They really want to let the market suffer as much as it takes for employment to suffer, and then see if that has an impact on inflation. But that's all, you know, big picture speculative stuff. As far as nuts and bolts coming up this week, it's a limited week for econ data.
Yeah,
we do have several housing reports, NAHB builder confidence tomorrow, housing starts, building permits Wednesday, existing sales on Thursday. But then as far as potential market movers, the probably biggest deal of the week would be Philly Fed on Thursday. And even that is not typically an excruciatingly big deal, but it's the best we have this week. So really just watching how things trade out, corporate bond issuance, trade flows, see how technical levels hold up, and just sort of eternal vigilance, waiting.
Eternal vigilance. it's probably pretty accurate. Very accurate. Good job, Matt. I love your screen. I love your technology. Most of all, I love how you have created a means by which people can share ideas, get the updated information, express themselves, and then like all the interviews. I was clicking on it. I heard someone else say this. I was clicking on some of the interviews that you've been putting up on the video screen, and then I go click them like a day or so later, and some of them weren't playing. Is that just a temporary glitch, or is that something with, like, it had to do mostly with CNBC videos. Was that just a temporary glitch, or are they should they always be available to view?
Well, if it's a video that is from CNBC, it should always be available. But if it's a press conference or some live coverage of an event, those are generally just available on that day, and they're not, like, you know, stored permanently.
Very good. Excellent, excellent. I appreciate you, man. I appreciate what you do. I love your product. Everyone should be signing up, especially this time. And then we may create another window in there for Mark Helm to come in and say, okay, everybody, don't jump out the window. Don't jump off the roof. Here's some reason just to kind of settle everyone down. We have to just bring a little logic. But you do a really good job in how you balance out what's going on in the chat room. It's really good stuff, Matt. Love it.
Yeah, I like psychology better than finance, too.
Yeah, exactly right. And this is the market of psychology. All right. Let's see here. Get around. You get some real quick feedback. Then we'll get over to Mr. Kittle. Mark, you want to add to that what Matt said? Anything?
No, sir. I think it's right on point.
Alice, you want to add anything?
I agree. Thanks, Matt, for all you do.
Yeah, he does a great job. That's it, Mr. Kittle.
No, same.
All right.
Well, I have arrived. Let me tell you, I can rest.
You have
easy.
Arrived.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
You got everyone speechless. I have arrived. All right. Very good. Well, let's get over to Mr. Kittle. Good to have you here, Mr. Kittle. Always a pleasure.
Hello, David.
Giving us our production update. What's going on in the world? I'm asking more about. One of the things I was going to ask and talk to you about is, David, is the need for companies that are creating, and you mentioned this last week when we were talking about what Quicken is doing, or Rocket, excuse me, is doing, and they changed their name and the rebranding and that. I've got to stay up on it. But the Rocket was doing is on the products that they market. And I was talking with one of my clients this morning, and they go, God, they just have such a brilliant way of repositioning products, so it makes it look like they have a product that no one else has. And that's really a talent and a gift that's gone out of the industry. We talk about originators, David, you've talked about this in previous segments, where originators have lost the art of how to go sell and explain the Just Right Mortgage and other more unique products, but also the creation of products. So hope we can get a little discussion going around that today before we get over to Alice. But love your thoughts. What you got for us today?
Well, just to that point about Rocket Mortgage, I mean, that what I mentioned last week was, you know, please go ahead and finance with us. And because they buy and service their own mortgages, they can do what they want with them. And they can offer a no-cost refinance anytime in the next 18 months to 2 years. I mean, if your agreements with your investors, if you're selling on the correspondent side, are such that you can structure something past the end of your agreement, then you can offer that. I mean, I did it 20 years ago. So it's not anything new. It's just something that you, you know, pull out of the box because we've been through these cycles before. Again, it was a credit issue that we had back in 08 and 09. This is strictly policy this time. This is not bad credit. This is all policy decisions that are doing this to us. And loan officers, to your point a minute ago, David, haven't had to pull any of this out for the last 12, 13 years because rates have been lower and going lower. So they haven't had to do anything else except sell rate. And they don't know how to structure a deal. Production is still off. Cash out refinances are almost non-existent. The purchase market's off anywhere from 36 to 40% nationwide right now. And we're coming into the holidays, which is strictly that time of year, or usual that time of year, when you always have a turn down because the focus goes away from buying. And I think the decision is you hunker down, you get out. And I remember what a regional manager of mine told me back in the 80s. A gentleman passed away here earlier this year. His name was Bruce Culpreth. Great friend of mine. And he looked at me and he said, Mr. Kittle, those that get the most answers of no also get the most answers of yes. And so you just got to go out and double your efforts, make more calls, and make sure that you're up to date on the fact that this may be again, and I harp on this all the time, it's an arm market. Have that in your quiver if you can get it there. And learn how to structure the deal when you sit down with customers, assuming you get to sit down face-to-face with them these days and, you know, not over a Zoom call. It's just being patient and knowing how to work the deal and developing the relationship with the borrower that you're going to be there for them after this deal and help them refinance should rates fall. And I've got to tell you, to all the comments, and I'll end with this, David, you know, there was, in part of our discussion last week, there was that rumor, you know, the Fed, well, going to raise two more times, but there were some rumors out there, you know, that maybe they wouldn't do that and maybe things would ease by 100 basis points. Could be the absolute worst thing that could happen to us right now. They would show an inability of the Fed to stay the course of the decisions they've made, and it would absolutely freeze our market if we had any dips in rate right now, because the first instinct when rates go up is to get off the fence and buy, and the first instinct when rates go low is for everybody to withdraw and wait for them to go lower.
Yeah.
And so I think we need to stay right where we are for now and get this inflation under control, however long it takes, until we get back to real stability in the marketplace.
Good thoughts. Good perspective. Yeah, everyone's wishing for lower rates, but the psychological market psychology is why people go say, oh, rates are falling. Well, let's just wait a little longer and see how – let's get on the lowest end. Everyone's – and then they bemoan when they things spike up again. They go, oh, I missed the window. I'm going to delay again. All you're doing is delaying getting into home ownership.
You know, markets love certainty, and they've got to see certainty out of this Federal Reserve because they missed it for so long.
No kidding. Don't even get me started on the Federal Reserve. But Yeah. If you haven't read the book, Creatures of Jekyll Island, you got to go read that book. It's really, really interesting about the creation of it. Well, we could go on and on. Mr. Kittle, it's always a joy to have you on. Appreciate you. Looking for your contribution.
You're welcome.
Anyone else want to add anything? Matt, want to add anything to what Mr. Kittle's had to say?
Yeah, I'm buying a house. I'm using an arm. Go sell the arms.
There you go. Well, you know what's so interesting about that, Matt? This is actually a quick discussion point. And Alice, if you hang on just one quick moment, I do want to fit this in. I've been challenging a lot of our clients to challenge their capital markets people, along with work in part with parcel with hand in hand with their production person or the owners to create products. There's a lot of banks right now that have CRM challenges. and they're wanting product. And you can create a product that's unique to that bank, or it's unique to you, and then go take that to the market. And we used to do that all the time. In fact, back when we walked 5 miles through the snow to go to school, type of thing, it started in 1973 in the industry. I mean, this was back where a lot of loans were, we were just coming into the healthy secondary markets the way we were. And before that, they used to package suitcases full of loans, fly from the West Coast out to the East Coast to a savings loan and sell the loans out of a suitcase. That's truly the way secondary marketing happened back in those days. But what we lost the art of with all our technology, the GSEs, thank God for the GSEs, man, oh, man. But it's the art of creating products, getting with a financial institution that has a need, and you helping them meet that need, and they help you by creating a product that's unique to you. So we have several clients that are in the process of doing that right now, and I could give some major shout-outs, but I don't want to because that's their phone will ring off the hook. But they're creating products. We would like to have this product. And then they create the product, the guidelines and everything else. Then they take those and market it to the local banks. And they go, bankers, would you like this? How would this product look? And then you could tweak it from there. But if you should go there and ask them for the product. So, Matt, how does that hit you? Does that sound like craziness, or what's your thoughts?
I'm sorry. I was working on my other screen. I didn't know that you wanted to follow
Mark,
up for me.
So. Mark, you've been in this industry as long as I have. Then, Mr. Kittle, what do you think about that?
I'm all for it. And, we forget whether it's an adjustable or not, too. Somebody mentioned this. It may have been Alice. I don't want to put words in her mouth. But, don't forget the good old 2-1 buy down.
Yeah.
Where you can get.
Yep.
There's.
Yep.
There's a lot of people listening right now going, what the heck's that? But
two.
Oh, no, that's wildly popular on MBS Live the past month or two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's back. Mark?
Hey, David, I'm going to profess my ignorance to Mr. Kittle. Is the FHA graduated payment mortgage still in play these days?
The 245, yeah.
No.
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 No, Alice. We go to Alice for that. She
I remember that. Oh, that's crazy. That was a crazy product.
Well, this is a good time to bring you on, Alice. So let's start right there. Here's Alice Alvey with the legislative update. But we're going to start off talking about some of the old programs that are no longer. But that old 245, Mark, I was thinking about that the other day as well. Alice Alvey is here, CMB Vice President of Education and Training of UD Home Mortgage. We appreciate Mr. Cosgrove lending you to us each week for a little bit. So, Alice, talk about what happened to that product and a little insights.
Well, I am, for those of you who don't remember, I'd have to recall all the details myself, but the concept was that your payment went up gradually, and it was a percentage,
yeah.
Well, and it had a cap.
I have adjustments, I remember.
Yeah, and so, but the bottom line was that product went away quite some time ago, and we haven't seen it since the days of the really high double-digit interest rates. And it's great that we're talking about products because I actually serve with our products team and do a lot of help with the implementation, looking at different correspondents. So, Dave, when you were talking about trying to create a product and present that out to, a bank to see if they might be interested in it, I think today the challenges are, the banks wanting to, especially the ones who want to deal in a larger volume, right? So you might be able to come up with a one-on-one relationship. But what we've seen with a lot of correspondents is they have a great idea for a non-QM specialized product, and then the minute the market turns around, they're back out. And so the investors these days seem to be not quite as committed to a particular product when it comes to terms. And so what I recommend to folks is look at documentation as another alternative, not simply just the product terms as we traditionally think of a new product. Look at documentation, and that actually segues right into my piece with two proposed rules that are out there. So, but I'll stop to see if you want to get any comments from others about the GPM, but it's a nice segue for...
Mark and I are so old, we remember that like yesterday.
Yeah, the reason why I was asking the question, that wasn't necessarily the best product on the face of this earth. It worked for some folks. It was great for first-time home buyers, people right out of school that were going to see increases income and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But for somebody in a steadfast job that had a pretty, standard salary and just normal increases, it was not a good mortgage at all. and we saw a lot of defaults come out of that. But I think there could be a variation of it nowadays that could be done a lot better than it was done back then that might work.
Well, I'll add something to that, Mark. As a loan officer in 1978 on straight commission, I bought my first house on the FHA 245 program. And it was NEGAM. It graduated 7.5% of the previous payment, not interest rate a year, went up five or six times until you were paying more than you should have, but it let you in, and eventually you paid back the NEGAM. And back then you were betting on in high interest rates, which you had, appreciation of property.
Yep.
That's right. And so I was one of those guys, by the way, Mark, that did not default, just so you know.
That's good, Dave. That's good, buddy.
Never thought you would have. That's good, Alice. Thank you so much for being a historian here and bringing us all back up to that. All those old guys go, do I remember 245 back in the day? So anyway, Alice Alvey, good to have you here. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. Yeah, I did. I remember those programs too. Like somebody brought up the wrap and the 2-1 buy down. Actually, even 3-2-1 buy downs. If you're working with a builder, it's a little easier for them to kind of work in those costs, because that's the benefit of a buy down, is if you can get someone else to pay it. We're still trying to figure out the math as to why a borrower would ever want to pay all their interest up front. You know, you do get some cases where maybe they got it as a gift, but definitely a product that, you know, people are talking about today and originating on all products. So
seller incentives, it's going to come back. It's going to come back. It's seller incentives. When you've got someone who's trying to sell, someone's just telling me how they dropped the price of a home. It's down 30% from what it was listed at just, you know, like 4 or 5 months ago. And it's already down 30 and may go to 40%. Well, why not put some of that into a buyer, into a seller concession for the buyer at a form of a buy down? Don't give up the equity. Put it in there, incentivize someone. So enough fun. Alice, you got so much good stuff to go over. Let's get it in. Get it covered.
Yeah, because usually that's the first step, right? As you watch the markets come down from the sale prices, the first step is sellers are starting to be willing to offer sales concessions, and then you'll start to see those list prices come down, you know, where they start to hit a dose of reality of what it's really worth today. So it's hard to see how much of that is baked in. It's different in each market. So, yes, watching that closely. So what we have that's playing right into this, you have two proposed rules, listeners, that you should be paying attention to that are along the same line. So we've got the Federal Housing Administration. They have a proposed rule. They're also looking for trying to make sure whether or not we've got availability of financing for small balance loans. And, you know, so they are asking for a comment. The comments for this one, it's due in October, just in a few days. And the other one that I'm going to talk about is not due till November. But they're looking for information about, you know, housing markets. Could there be, what are the barriers to cost, even if it's servicing cost barriers? Are there any state and local requirements that are affecting the availability of small mortgages? What consumer protections are required to make sure that small mortgages should be considered more readily by the FHA? And when I read through all of this, you know, they don't mention anything about the ability to pay rules that really are the biggest overhang on this. Because ultimately, you know, when we have Maven fails, I say Maven, you know, any compliance fail for an ATR, QM points, and fees test, that really starts to be one of the biggest barriers to the small loan amounts. And I would really love to see that our industry jumps on this, says, yes, we're all for trying to make better, easier for documentation, easier to have manual underwriting work. But the way to do that is lighten up on some of the ability to repay and QM standards that were created in a totally different market and nothing like the market that we have today. And so the other rule is coming from the CFPB. They're really looking for a similar piece. They want to know if there's any kind of how to improve smaller mortgage amount availability. They're also concerned about relative availability of refinance opportunities for consumers in rural areas. And they just, you know, statistically, homes with lower market values contribute a much lower rate of financing for Black and Hispanic consumers who have a tendency to be in those statistics for lower priced houses. So there is an impact that they want to try and resolve. And same thing, as you kind of look through their list of ideas, one of their things that they publish is, what about an auto refi mortgage? If your mortgage was automatically set to refi the minute it was a benefit, and my head gets swirling on, okay, if I'm an MBS investor, I don't want my mortgage pulled out of my pool at any random point that I'm not in control of. So you can see there's a couple areas in both the FHA request and the CFPB request where they don't understand the some real root causes and some consequences. So I think it's super important for lenders to comment on both of these. So, Dave, I'll turn it back to you and see if anybody has questions.
Yeah, any questions? Let's start with you, Mr. Kittle. Any questions?
Sorry, no. Couldn't get off mute there, Dave. Sorry about that.
That darn mysterious mute button moves around on me, too, as well. That's good. Good job. Good report. Alice, Matt. Excuse me, Matt's already had the drop. Go back to the work and his screens. He's working away there. Mark, any thoughts?
Well, I think one of the points Alice made, I experienced firsthand and saw it with the MBS investors, mainly Ginnie Mae. I forget the years. I've been around too many years now to remember. But knew a company that was doing these step-down refinances, and they weren't happy just to do a refinance. They did a step-down, meaning that they could probably refinance it three times in 2 years.
Right.
And Ginnie Mae went friggin' nuts on that. And I don't blame them, you know. And everybody else, and there was a committee, and I don't remember the name of it, that sanctioned a couple lenders for doing that. There were a couple lenders in the company who were real bad about that. The rate would be at 9%, and, you know, they would when they do a 9% mortgage when the market was 8%, and they're making an extra spread in there, and they keep stepping it down. And I saw one VA loan, excuse me, FHA loan that was done four times in 2 years. Four times.
Wow.
Yeah, we would see that too. I remember in those days, you know, seeing borrowers who didn't have to make a payment for 6 months because they were just perpetually refinancing once the rates started going down, you know.
Yeah.
That's called shift and delay.
Shift and delay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the number of borrowers that didn't make payments for 2 years because, just do another refi. Yeah. You can go on and on and on about that. But anyway, Alice, Alvy, so good. Appreciate your report as you do each and every week. You are loved by so many and missed when you're not here, but we're so grateful when you do send in that. I'm still getting some comments about that, the report that you recorded and sent in. There's just something. You strike a chord with our listeners, and thank you for your contributions each and every week. All you all do, all the rest of everyone regulars do. But there's just something about having Alice here for as long as she's been here, since the beginning. She's one of the first calls I made when I came up with the idea of doing this podcast now 15-some years ago. And she showed up and has been here consistently almost every single program. Thank you, Alice. Appreciate you so much.
You're welcome, Dave. My pleasure.
You bet. I'm going to miss you at the MBA this year. So wish you were going to be there. But we'll get along without you somehow. But I'm really looking forward to the Empower event. And Marcia Davies and her daughter, Emily, is going to be stopping by the podcast booth. And we're going to record an interview with them. So really looking forward to that. So, Mark Helm, you gave us so much wisdom right out of the gate there when you made the comments you did. I mean, it's just like one of those special moments. You go, thank God this is a record. I'm going to go back and listen to it and use that a lot. But let's get over to the topic.
Yeah, my wife humbled me a few minutes ago. She heard it when she walked through the room, and she said, "Why don't you listen to your own advice?"
Yeah,
so I got took back down to earth. I want to mention one thing, David. I think it is important. I really appreciated getting that call from that individual. So I welcome anybody that wants to call us or send us an email.
Yeah.
About questions, because there's a lot of things we can share some knowledge with and find out more about what's happening in the industry. So it's just as important for you to reach out to us and tell us what's going on as us to be on this podcast every week and talk about things.
Yeah, it is really important. Yeah, okay, great point, Mark. Yeah. So any updates on service? I was thinking when you were saying, ask, listen, and evaluate. There you go. All right. That was
ale.
Yeah.
A cup of ale.
Well, it's like the ready, aim, shoot kind of thing. And And so but how many times, so when I heard the ale, I thought, oh, you act, then you listen, then you evaluate. No.
It's fast, listen, evaluate. And by the way, that belongs to me. I didn't copy that from anybody. That's my
book. Well, that's good. That's good. Well, that's excellent. What updates for you have on servicing? We've got Phoenix Capitalist reached out to us, wants to come on the podcast. We're looking forward to having anyone, any of you all listening to this, you want to have special, if you think you have a product that you want to bring on or talk about it, we're happy to bring you on. This is a good point just to interject this, Mark, if you wouldn't mind. Anyone who's contacted me, and I get so many messages, hey, Dave, I'd really like to come on your podcast. I'd like to talk about that. We're doing this. And we're about thought leadership, even when we have the hot topics. So if you listen to Brett at Forum Free, the interview we released earlier, or Eric Lappin when we did his the week before, or anyone with a hot topic, why don't we say that we'll bring up the companies. We're fine promoting certain products, especially if they're advertisers. We can do that. They're paying us to do that. But more importantly, it's we want to be about critical thought. We want to bring thoughts and ideas to you as our listeners, and each and every week. And we've changed up the format to be a little more contemporaneous, where we all just kind of get in there, and we're getting a lot of feedback. It's really being well received. So if you have a thought on a product you want to be on, we're open to it. Just tell me what the thought leadership is about. So let's make sure that Mark will keep the letters of fan mail coming in here, but glad you got a call. It's good. All right, servicing, what you got? Or Jenny May approvals, Matt. Mark. You're muted out, Mark. If you're talking, we're not hearing
you. No, I'm not muted out. What did you say, David? I couldn't hear you.
Loan servicing. What do you have on a loan servicing update or a GSE update on getting approved and any info from the information on the GSE?
Well, I give you an update on either one, but I think the most important one to give you right now is in my day-to-day work, we've got a number of people going in for approvals right now, and two things that's going to tell us. It's going to test the timelines for the approval process with the GSEs, and that's all of them, Freddie, Fannie, and Jenny. And it also, it's going to tell us a little bit how sticky they are on new requirements. We've had changes in the Ginnie Mae requirements. We've had it feel like some of the tightening of the requirements on the other GSEs, but the changes on Ginnie Mae were back in August. And the applications going now are filling those changes, capital requirements and others. So I think we're going to be able to, in just a couple of weeks, give you a firsthand approach of what we're finding out on these new applications going in and what's changed for the good and what's changed for the bad. And there's nothing better than practical experience working an application through the process after changes is taken. And, you know, everybody's real conservative right now because, you know, you don't have a lot of mortgage companies in the red. These last couple quarters being in the red from the not letting the people go yet and downsizing and all that. So, you know, you can still get an approval with your net worth, but you got to have enough net worth and capital to weather the storm, so to speak, of the downsizing that you're doing. So you're going to see interesting how that plays. So I'm real, real interested to see how things turn out in the next 60 to 90 days, and we'll keep you posted with updates on this program as to what we're seeing in the approval market out there.
Good. Is this a time to be having a servicing strategy? Someone just wrote me and asked me that question. Ask Mark, is this a time to be retaining?
It's, you know, we discussed this a little bit last week and a little bit the week before. And Mr. Kittle had some very good comments about it, as did others. It's a tough decision to make right now because we know that that some of the loans we're originating now, the rates they are going to be subject to refi if we have a quick turn in the market somewhere down the road. But we don't really feel like the market's enough, you know, that a 1% drop, Les was talking about, or a 2% drop would be enough to drive that much of refis because people might be holding on the way to a bigger drop to come back where the rates get back to where they were a year ago. So I don't know. But I think the most important thing is that servicers, especially young, new servicers, ought to retain business that they're familiar with. If they know the requirements of the services better for Freddie Mac, retain their Freddie Mac. If they know it better for Fannie Mae, retain the Fannie Mae. And then when they do that, retain that servicing, I think they need to look at characteristics. If you don't have a strong servicing shop, you don't want to retain servicing. It's going to be more risky for default. If you done servicing and it's in your own backyard, like if you're a Texas lender and you do Texas, Oklahoma, and Louisiana,
yeah,
that's one thing. But do you really want to have your retained loans or your branch in Massachusetts? Whole different subset of rules for your services up there,
yeah,
or Maryland or Chicago or other places. So do you want to compact what you service and do a regional servicing aspect? Now, a lot of people say that's negative because if you do regional, you could have economic or disaster-type related things that could affect you on a regional basis. But I would rather deal with those things as a one-off than deal with the fact I'm trying to service a loan. I don't know everything about it I need to do. And so I think people need to pay attention to what they keep. And and if they sell a loan that's a little bit higher interest rate because they're afraid of refi, get what they can out of it and sell it, then they don't have to have that worry. They've marked their loss right then when they sold it, you know, of what they gave up, what they're going to give up. They marked it right then. It's going to be no more than that. And if they can be happy with what they sell it for, they need to be selling it rather than retain it. They're concerned about what their book balance and their capital requirements and their net worth.
Spot on.
And everybody's different on that. Everybody's financials are set up weird. You know, we've got all these different things that make it up. They're so different from one company to the next. So every company has to sit down with their external accountants and their CFO and say, how much can we suffer on MSR value here? And how much can we sell these loans for that makes sense for us? You know, you just got to play that gambit and run strategic models on it and figure out what you want to do. I call that figure out what you want to do when you grow up. You know?
Yep. And there is a certain amount of growing up when you go into the servicing. It does take you into another aspect
sure
of business.
Is.
It's certainly helping some in these challenging times, but timing is everything, and location of what you hold for servicing. And one of the things, Mark, and I hope you don't mind me bringing this up, but you have a software product that you created on helping lenders pick on what they should keep and what they should let go of. And it's a wonderful value. And, you know, you're so humble, you don't talk a lot about it, but I want to give a big shout out to you. So anyone that's out there that has a portfolio looking to sell some of your portfolio, don't do it until you talk to Mark Helm. Get on the phone call. He's so generous with his time, too generous.
Right. And David, that product's used more on the front end when you originate the loan, when you make a decision, when are you going to keep it in your portfolio, you want to sell it. And it looks with at everything, every aspect of a loan, not just credit score. It looks at everything. It looks whether it's a escrowed or non-escrowed loan, whether people have tax exemptions on the property, where the property is located, are they in a disaster zone, all the things that you might not be an expert on servicing. If you're servicing your own loans, you get an opportunity to play. There's about 18 characteristics that evaluate a loan. It's kind of hard after you put the loan in with an investor to decide what you want to keep and what not, because it's kind of hard to sell. You can't sell loans out of a Ginnie Mae pool, so I'll give you an example. There's certain things you can do with Freddie and Fannie, you can't do with Ginnie, but it's really made up front to help you set the practice that you want to have for the type of portfolio you want to have long term. And you build your principles you want it to build on and stick with those principles. And then, you know, hopefully if you do a good job in the areas you're in and you monitor things right, you're building a really sustainable portfolio that's going to be more prone for you to either refi your cell phone, et cetera, and give your customer a higher level of customer service, which is what it's all about.
That's what it's all about. Alice, you want to add anything to that? Oh, she said,
squeezed me right in just before I was going to have to drop. You just touched on the technology aspect a little bit. I'd love to have a program where we can get your thoughts on that, because that seems to be such an important piece of being able to manage servicing effectively, is not only knowing what to service, but having the right technology to do it efficiently.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
We got to do that. Well, a great suggestion, Alice. Thanks for sticking around just long enough to get that last response in. Have a great rest of your week, Alice, and we'll talk to you soon. You bet. Mr. Kittle, now I'll let you add to any commentary as you see on all of this. Let's talk kind of about what Mark just said.
It would only sound like babble after listening to Mark, because, I mean, it doesn't get you better than that. He knows everything. I would say something that he didn't, that if you decide to get into it, to Alice's point and everybody else, it's the right partner, having the right technology. And if it's your first time in, you should choose one of the best sub-servicers you can find out there to go down that path together.
It's so good. It's not about price. You know, who get the cheapest guy who can do it out there at the lowest cost. It's really about who can do it the best. And then also,
yeah, David,
Yeah.
David, you made a big point, Mr. Kittle. I do that, Mr. Kittle, because we've got two Davids on the phone.
Yeah, anyway. We got two.
But Mr. Kittle, we had a good point because the problem you got with the subservicing atmosphere, not all subservicers are created equal. And some have been doing it a long time and do a good job. Some have been doing it a long time and do an average job. And there's some brand new people do a great job, and some brand new people don't do so good of a job. There's enough servicers that you should evaluate, in my opinion, a minimum of 3 to 4 servicers before you make a decision.
Yep, subservicers, exactly. And the other thing is the talent moves from one company to another. You don't do business with the companies. You do business with the people that work at the companies. So you got to keep track of who are the key people there. And that the most important part of all of this. Mark Helm can help you through it, listeners. Man, this has been another one of those really fun, really good, very important podcasts. And Mark, you started it right off there at the beginning with some pearls of wisdom. Ale, I like that. Ask, listen, and evaluate. A lot of wisdom in that. I'm going to take some of that back to my marriage myself. I think my wife would say, why don't you practice that a little more yourself? Good stuff. Mark Helm, thank you for being here as a co-host. Mr. Kittle, thank you for being here each and every week. I just I really appreciate your contributions to making this podcast something special in the marketplace. It's both entertaining as well as highly, most importantly, most very, very informative. Appreciate you both very, very much. And I would say goodbye to Alice and Matt, but they've already exited the switchboard and the scene. So a special thank you goes out to our sponsors. We thank Adam and Les and David and Alice and Mark and Alan. Alan Pollock hasn't made it here. I didn't hear from him as to what happened. Wish him well. Look forward to seeing him in Nashville. Special thank you goes out to our sponsors, Candor Technology, Finastra, FormFree, Lender Toolkit, Total Expert, Simple Nexus, Mortgage Bankers Association of America, thank you, MBA, and Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative, TMC, as well as Success Kit, Knowledge Coop, Mobility MMI, Modix, Mortgage Advisory Tools, as well as DW Consulting. WYMS does such a good job. WYMS does such an amazing job. Looking forward to seeing you all in Nashville. We'll be having our podcast pre-recorded next week, and we'll be looking forward to sharing more wisdom. So thank you. Have a great week, everybody. See you in Nashville.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.